Hey guys, Sklar Brothers here with Dan Van Kirk.
Yes.
From Dumb People Town, and we've got Adam from Adam Ruins Everything. Adam Conover on the show this
Hello.
Week.
Hello!
Good time in Dumb People Town, right? I mean, you like to make people smarter. When they finish watching your show
and try to
listen to your podcast, they try and be smarter. We are going to not be focusing on those people in this episode.
No, but we are going to focus on possibly the greatest eyewitness to any one of our stories. Mulver.
The first story has one of the greatest Dumb People Town characters ever, and he didn't actually do anything wrong. Check it out.
Hey, weird adults. Today's episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible has the best audiobook performances, the largest library, and the most exclusive content, and you'll feel something when you listen. Learn more at audible.com/weirdadults, where you can get 30 days free and one free audiobook. It's awesome, and just so you know, I'm right now reading Missoula. I think it's a must read, and it's super easy to digest if you're listening to it on Audible. I'm also highly, highly, extremely beyond above recommending you read or listen to on Audible, So You've Been Publicly Shamed by John Ronson. If you are of the now, if you are living in the time that we're living, which I hope you are if you're listening to this, if not, please seek medical attention because you are in fact dead. But if you are living, you have to read So You've Been Publicly Shamed by John Ronson, and you can get it for free by going to audible.com/weirdadults. This book is such a necessary read because it's so relevant to the times we're living in, and I just think it's awesome. All right, guys, check it out, audible.com/weirdadults. Today I have Allison Rosen on the show.
I'm very excited to be here. Thank you.
Are you?
Yes, I am.
What today I'm going to focus on being really calm and chill because I think I was very psycho when I did your show and talked a lot about the apocalypse and just
Ebola.
And Ebola and therapy. Like that. And I feel like I'm just going to like let you be you, and I'm not going to jump all over things, even though it is my show.
I feel like you should do your thing.
Okay.
You just got to do you.
Okay, you're right.
Whatever that might be.
Okay. Forget what I just said then.
Wait, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
I don't want to cut. Just do you, and now I'm going to talk over you. Okay, so on my way here, I was thinking, it must be so convenient to do your podcast in your house, because I do mine in a studio, but I always think maybe I should just do this in my house. But then I was super late and I thought, wait, maybe that's the downside of having it in your house, is that people feel like, oh, well, probably there isn't a strict schedule or anything like that. Does that happen a lot? And I'm sorry, I'm such an unprofessional piece of shit that I showed up so late and I was all discombobulated and couldn't find it.
I think if anything, what you said just makes more sense for having it at your house, because then if people are late, it's like, okay, not a big deal. Unless I have something to do, but...
True, because people are often late at the studio, and I think that they just figure it's a podcast, who cares, not realizing that, no, there's podcasts that are scheduled after this, and I have to be out of the studio by a certain time.
Right. Well, also, like, it is Los Angeles. It is a Friday at 4. I assume, like, unless you're just totally overprepared for traffic, like, it's gonna be a nightmare.
Also, you live in a super cute part of town where all of a sudden streets start jutting out where you aren't expecting them.
Yes.
And taking a left is like, well, but there's too many options. There's too many lefts that I can take at this intersection.
Yeah, it's tricky, you know. And I don't always, by the way, record at home. Sometimes we do have a studio that we record in, but lately I've been trying to just do it at home, and I like it a lot. I also now am new to recording without an audio engineer. And I think that's like a nicer touch.
Yeah, I wonder about that too. I wonder, do people feel more comfortable without more bodies around? Maybe
or,
they do.
Yeah, although like I said, I opened up insanely on your show and I was in like a very clinical setting. So
right, maybe that helps.
Yeah.
We'll see.
So it's Halloween today.
Yes, it is.
And you emailed me that you hate this holiday.
I hate Halloween. I don't like being scared. I don't see the appeal. I'm not someone who comes up with my costume on November 1st and plans it for the whole year. I find the whole thing annoying. And annoying with potential to be frightening. Hence, this is not my favorite holiday. I just got distracted by your beautiful plants.
Oh, thank you.
I have
you.
Similar plants, but I can't keep them alive. Like, they just suddenly took a turn for the worse. Mine just did. They had been, because they've been alive for a long time, and now they're just begging to be put out of their misery. Do you keep these alive?
These ones I don't keep alive. I did have a little, I decided I wanted to grow herbs, like, so I could throw them in my meals, you know, a little mint in a smoothie and a little basil and pasta. And I was keeping them alive and for a while, but then, like, they were never desirable to use in my food. And then I was just like, forget it.
Yeah.
Just now they're dead. Yeah. Now all the plants are gone. And, well, they're outside still. But I do think, I don't know, I need, like, food grade mint, even though that probably was.
It just, I feel like that probably was, yeah.
Yeah.
But it didn't look good.
It just didn't look good. Didn't smell right. Oh.
Maybe it has to do with the amount of sun. Or amount of something or other.
Because
with my plants, they're not food plants. They're just plants you buy and then you try to keep alive in your apartment.
Why?
They're not doing well.
Here's what I don't get. It seems like maintenance that doesn't reap a lot of benefits. Like, why do you care to have plants?
I like the way they look. But sometimes I think about that. To go super deep, I think, how weird is it that we take these tiny trees and put them inside? What are we doing? Are we trying to convince ourselves that we're outside? Why is that visually appealing? But I think it is. There's just something so pretty about having lots of greenery around. Although now I have, like, brownery.
Oh, because they're gone.
They're dying. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the one thing I will say is I've read a lot of articles about how plants, like, help make the air better in your house. And so that's appealing, but I don't know. It's just, they die so easily and it's... maintenance is hard. I don't, the looks of it are, like, not what I'm into.
What are you into? The challenge?
No, I think, like, if it's gonna help clear the oxygen in the room, whatever they do,
right?
Purify air, I don't know.
I think it's claimed that they do that.
Do I need an air purifier? Is that, like, a thing that we all need? Oh my god, my phone.
I don't think so.
Okay,
the air feels pretty pure in here.
I feel like I constantly see infomercials about air purifiers, and then I go into a panic that I don't have one, and then, like, every now and then I think about that and it's, like, scary.
Yeah, I was just listening to an episode where you were talking about your fears about Crest white strips.
Oh,
how are you feeling about that these days?
You know, well, I figured out that the tea, I was drinking a specific tea that was making my teeth darker. It wasn't coffee. It was a strange tea.
What kind of tea was it?
It's called Runa tea, which is, like, you can buy it in a cold bottle and it has a lot of caffeine and not a lot, like 90 milligrams, it's like a cup of coffee. So I'm cutting down on that. And then I think, like, as needed, I'm going to use white strips. But I'm not as reliant upon them as I thought I would be. Do you use them?
No, occasionally. I have those trays, the teeth whitening tray things. Whoa. That you get at the dentist that I did a million years ago. And so you put the gel in the tray and then you do it, like, every night or every other night, and you sleep with them in. This was like 10 years ago that I think that I did it, though.
Well, that's
so
advanced.
I think the technology has improved. So I don't think you have to do it overnight. But then now I'll still occasionally put them in. And the last time I did it, my teeth became so sensitive afterwards that just, so I ride this exercise bike and I have a fan pointing at me. And if the air from the fan touches my teeth, it hurts a tiny bit. So I don't think this is good. And I don't think my teeth look that white. I was hearing you say that you don't have a dentist.
No.
It's been a while since I've gone to mine. I still go to the one in the town where I grew up.
Same.
Yeah. And I feel like that's stupid. I feel like we should get people in LA, but it is hard to find people in LA.
I'm so glad you're bringing this up. I've tried it. I've tried a couple dentists out here. Not good.
What do you not like about them?
I mean, one was just, firstly, like, no one was there. It was in a weird strip mall. The cleaning hurt so much more than it's supposed to hurt. And I just felt like they were, like, shady. I just think in LA there's so many shady versions of the normal things that
yes.
we need. And it's so hard to navigate that. And everything's probably overpriced. And it's just the problems of being in a big city. It's like we have great restaurant options, but you just can't find a dentist.
Right. And then I never know really whether to trust Yelp or not.
Yeah, I don't either. Dude, this is so annoying. Okay, so there is this eye cream, this like all natural eye cream that my friend recommended to me. And I was on Amazon like, oh my God, these reviews are amazing. I'm definitely going to get this because it was just everything I wanted, like great ingredients that I trusted and everyone was swearing by it. And then I got the cream and it was like, if you give us a good review on Amazon, we'll send you a another free bottle. And I was pissed off. And now I didn't do it. And I think that the cream is just trash. Like
you feel betrayed.
Yeah. I feel like this is garbage. It's nothing. Like
I've seen at doctor's offices, I think is the worst, but at other types of businesses, there'll be a little placard in the front when you sign in that's like, you know, 15% off for a Yelp review, or show us your Yelp review and we'll give you a discount. Maybe not 50% off, but some right. off, some kind of discount.
Man, I also like had gone to a lot of different dentists because I thought I was having this like jaw problem and I wanted to get all these different opinions. And I went to like 4 dentists in 1 week and I didn't like one of them. They all kept trying to charge me like all this money and no one was honest. And I even like got them all through recommendations I thought I could trust. And it's not okay.
Mm-mm. When I lived in New York, my friend referred to it as I would just get serviced. Like I go to the gynecologist, like all the sort of maintenance kind of things I would just do when I flew back to California. But that's ridiculous to do it. Well, yeah. No, actually, if you're going to Illinois that's similar.
I do that for haircuts, dentist, ophthalmologist, but I have my like primary care physician I have out here. I found someone that's good.
Where did you find her?
I went to... like the first month I was out here, my mom made me go get a flu shot at like Walgreens or something. And the woman at like that clinic was like, oh, I was like, I need a doctor. And she was just happened to be this like cool, young, new nurse and was like, oh, I just worked for this doctor. She's like hard to get into. She's really good. And then I was like, oh, this is it. And then I remember my insurance changed and this doctor was out of my insurance. So I had to try someone new. And it was so bad. The new doctor, like, totally prescribed me weird stuff, was just not trustworthy at all. And then thank God, like I was able to switch back to my old doctor. So it's scary. If you need,
I hate how vulnerable this makes me feel here, yes. Thinking about this and just, but then I guess most people go through life not being worried about this. But I pretty much feel like, because my dad's a doctor, he's retired. Been retired for a really long time. So I don't trust his opinion on anything anymore because I feel like he's not up to date.
That's smart.
That being said, he sort of instilled in me this fear of doctors and fear of medicine, which almost seems counterintuitive.
Wait, what do you mean?
I think he thinks that a lot of doctors are crooks and a lot of, yeah.
That's interesting. He's a doctor. He would know.
Well, he knows what it was like many, many years ago. But that's his take on it is... that there's a lot of unnecessary procedures, unnecessary surgery done. And so he's always oriented towards being conservative and not, you know, if you can avoid surgery, don't have surgery. If you can avoid anesthesia, just a lot of fear of what can go wrong because he knows all the worst case scenarios. So I don't know how most people go through life not getting dead all the time.
How are you doing it?
I just recently kind of got over my fear of general anesthesia. I hadn't had general anesthesia until 2 years ago when I had to have surgery, which means that I had my wisdom teeth out under local, which I would not recommend.
Whoa.
Have you had your wisdom teeth out?
I have. And I remember thinking I wanted that and the doctor, because I was scared. I had been put out for surgeries as a kid. And then I saw this something like where someone accidentally put like the wrong dog to sleep, and it just made me keep thinking that like they were gonna put me down.
Yes.
And so I became really scared, and I remember, and they were just like, we're not gonna let you take your wisdom. I can't believe you did it. Like, what happened?
My dad was pretty much like, I mean, insisted is too strong. I'm sure if I had pushed back strongly, it was my mouth. I'm sure if I was like, I really want this under general, that he would have allowed it. But he was just kind of like, you really should do this under local. So I did, no sedative or anything. And there's a very fine line between pressure and pain. So okay. I was numbed. So it wasn't pain, but there was the the feeling of them like yanking my teeth out of my head was so strong that it felt kind of violent. I remember afterwards, I got in the car, mouth full of gauze, swollen. I just started crying. And I just felt like someone had like gang raped my face. Like there's just the violence of the procedure. I would have rather not been awake for it, but I was so afraid. I think of the loss of control of general anesthesia.
Yes.
Just that sort of, what if there's an anesthesia death? What if I never wake up? All those things that I really, that was my biggest fear when I had to have surgery. So it turned out that I had, or I have endometriosis. And so I had some cysts on my ovaries that needed to be removed. And that is something where they have to do it under general. So that was a couple of years ago. And I mean, it was fine. And then just recently I had to, sorry, I'm full of lady problems.
No,
I had to have some.
This is really fascinating.
Well,
actually.
So my husband and I are trying to get pregnant and I haven't been able to get pregnant. So we've gone to a reproductive endocrinologist to find out what's up. And he discovered that I had what they thought were fibroids in my uterus. And they thought maybe that's what's preventing it. So they went in to remove them. And it turned out that they were polyps, which are like easier to remove than fibroids. But that's another, they do that. Sometimes they do it under, I think, like in office under twilight sleep or something like that, where it's not really as intense as general. But because he thought there were, because of what he was seeing when he took images, he wanted to do it in a hospital under general. So I did that. And this time I talked to the anesthesiologist ahead of time and I told him about my other experience, which was I was pretty wide awake when they took me into the operating room and I felt this burning when I felt a burning in my hand that was like, oh my God, I don't know if I can take that. Boom. And then it was like someone turned out my lights and then I woke up and I told him about that. So he's like, okay, I can give, you know, whatever. He sort of tailored it so that I wouldn't have any of that. And honestly, it feels insane to say this, but it was, the whole thing was almost enjoyable. Like I, that whatever drug they gave me before they took me into the operating room hit so fast. I felt so relaxed and I felt so like almost calm and happy. And I felt like all I want to do is sleep and I get to sleep. It was like the best. It was the best feeling because I don't drink or do drugs or anything like that anymore. But this feeling I had before surgery, like if I could find this drug on the streets, it's just good. I can't. I mean, not that I really would. Although I've done a little bit of Googling, like it was that it's seriously been, well, so, and we can go into this, but my dog died a few weeks, or was it like a month? About a month before I had the surgery. And I've been really sad about it. And I would say the only real relief I've had from the sadness was that pre-surgery feeling. Because I was on the I knew I was in the operating room, you know, when they wheeled, before they gave me whatever like really knocks you out.
Wait, just to clarify, yes. this is the twilight or this is full knocked out?
No, the drug I'm talking about was, I believe it's Versed, and it's something they give you before to calm you.
Okay.
The actual drug to knock you out, I think, is propofol. But so, no, I'm now just talking about the moments,
the pre-surgery
stuff. Where, yeah, but so I, in that, was like on the table, feeling so calm, not afraid, so relaxed.
Oh,
and I
gosh.
Started thinking of the most upset, just to like test it. I started thinking of the most upsetting moments of Oliver's death. And I was like, I can think about this and I'm not sad at all. Sort of like when your mouth is numb and you sort of push on it. It
was
mentally doing that. Like I can think of the most upset, like someone could tell me the worst thing right now and it doesn't bother me at all.
Oh,
and then
God.
I felt, he told me he was going to put a tourniquet on my arm and give me lidocaine. And sorry, I can see you're wincing. And that would make it so that the propofol wouldn't burn. And so like, I even felt a little bit of tightness on my arm, didn't feel the propofol at all. And then woke up and then I was, you know, it was over. So yeah, it was all like, I feel like my fear of surgery for the most part has gone away, which I think is good because I just think, I'm not the kind of person who's going to go have a bunch of unnecessary surgery,
sure.
But every now and then you do have to have surgery. So I don't think that fear was serving me. I think it was a fear that my dad instilled in me as a way to try to keep me safe, because he didn't want me to go have a bunch of elective surgery ever, right, because there is a risk. But it's just better, I think, since to be alive is to occasionally need medical intervention, it's just better not to have that fear.
Yeah, that's definitely a great lesson and a great thing to know. I mean, like I said, when I was a kid, I had to be knocked out quite a few times. And
what kind of surgeries did you have to
like
have?
Like a lot of like tubes in and out of my ear, or in my ears twice. And then I had like a hole in my eardrum that I had to be put to sleep for. And I remember when I was a kid, it wasn't a big deal. I don't remember, I don't remember like the first three or four of them. And then like when I saw this 2020 and like a dog being put to sleep and it was the wrong one. And like this, like I had this idea in my head of being put out and never waking up. And then when I remember being in the doctor's office, I had chronic sinusitis, very glamorous issue. And like,
it's not as glamorous as my uterine polyps.
You're
but.
Right. You do win. So like I would have a sinus infection and then I would take antibiotics and then I would be healthy for 2 days. And then I would get another sinus infection. This happened for a year where I would only have like a couple days in between each one. And finally the ENT was like, I remember sitting in the office and he was like, you're going to have to get sinus surgery. And I just remember like getting up and walking out of the room, 'cause I was like 14 and I was so scared and upset and like, no, I don't want to do this. I don't want this. And then like just all this fear leading up to it. But then I do remember you do get knocked out so fast. Mm-hmm. Like it wasn't, I would like to think that because I have had that experience, like what you're saying, like in the future, I won't be as scared. But also then I do think like my dad, because when I was talking to my parents, I don't want to say I'm scared. My dad was like, you're a kid, like there's special treatment for children who have to go under. Now I'm like, and I think as an adult, it's not as good. I don't know. But surgery sucks.
I think if you're at a good hospital, then, I mean, but then it's like, well, how do you know? I don't know.
We're such, us together, it's like so much fear. It's not cool.
I know.
You brought up Oliver.
Yes.
Which I talked about this on your podcast. I know you've talked about this a lot, but like I've told you before, Chelsea Preddy told me about your dog and I immediately went to her Instagram and was like, holy shit, what's going on? And like, dug deep and tried to figure everything out. Would you like explain what happened?
Yeah, I will.
If that's okay.
Yeah, I don't mind. I have talked about it before, so now I'm getting okay. These like jerks. Although Duncan Trussell was just on my show and he said that anyone who would say what I'm about to say people have said to me is a goblin, so I shouldn't listen to them. So yeah. I shouldn't listen to the goblins. But there's a couple people who are like, tired of hearing you whining about your dead dog.
Well,
but to
this
you,
is
I
a
say,
new audience.
That's
and I,
right.
And I really want to, yes, okay. I want to hear this.
So my husband and I had, well, he was my fiance at the time that we got Oliver, but now my husband. We had this dog, this Cavalier King Charles Spaniel named Oliver, who was just insanely cute. We didn't realize he was going to become the cutest dog in the whole world, but he was. I used to joke that it was like walking a Kardashian because you just couldn't get very far because people were like, oh my God. And they'd come up and they'd want to pet him. And he was.
And this because he was like a super cute Cavalier, but he ended up being really small for his.
Yes. He was a runt but they thought he would be full size. And in fact, at the time I thought, is it bad to get a runt because, you know, is he going to have health problems later in life? But then we were told that that wasn't the case because if he had any significant health problems, these would be showing up and he seems really healthy. And it's a puppy, he did seem really healthy.
Did you feel like you won the lottery when you had a dog that only became like, what was it, 7 pounds full grown?
Yes.
I mean, that's insane.
Yes. Although actually, it turns out we won the super unlucky lottery.
Right.
But we did. We were like, we have the, like, how crazy. We have this Cavalier, we have the cutest Cavalier in the world, and he's like a miniature Cavalier. Although I always worried that people would think that we had set out to get some like crazy teacup cavalier, which doesn't exist. And if that did, that would mean there was like crazy bad breeding or something.
Right.
And that was not ever, our intention was not to get this weirdo Paris Hilton dog or anything.
Which, it just, by the way, that's my intention, but.
Well, those are cute. But no, it just turned out that we had this, the cutest dog in the world, and he had this little overbite which made it look like he had this like plaintive expression. And anyway, for anyone who wants to see the dog I'm talking about, it's my Instagram's at Allison Rosen, and he was just the cutest and the sweetest and the best. And we, like I said, we're trying to get pregnant, and he was like our baby. Like, we really treated him like our child. He made us a little family. My husband would, he would fall asleep on my lap every night, and my husband would carry him to bed and then give him a little massage and talk to him and tell him what to dream about at night. And seeing the way my husband treated him is what made me, I think, I mean, I was already in love with him, but I think it made me fall in love with him even more, because I'm like, he's going to be such an amazing dad. Just the, no matter what mood he was in, I mean, not like he's a super moody person anyway, but he could be in a bad mood and he would see Oliver and be like, you know, oh, hi. Like, just the fact that he was always calm and nice and affectionate towards Oliver made me think, I want those qualities in a husband. So anyway, we were on our honeymoon, and we got married back in March, but we waited a while to go on our honeymoon. We went on our honeymoon in August, and my mom was watching Oliver, and I was so worried about him. In a way that makes me wonder, like, did I know something? But I don't think so. I think it was just that I loved him so much that the idea of anything bad happening to him, it was just, it was like unbearable to me. So we were flying from Maui to Oahu on our plane landed, and I got this call from my mom, and I could kind of tell right away that something was wrong. And she said, I think he's going to be okay, but Oliver got hurt. And then it felt like it took her forever to get out what actually happened. But, and by the way, this was this like the kind of the call that I had been dreading and that I had been expecting in this weird way. And she took Oliver on a walk in the evening, and the neighbor's Malamute, and an Alaskan Malamute is a huge dog, was off leash and like ran around the corner and grabbed Oliver and shook him like a toy, is how she described it. And she, and Oliver began screaming right away. Oh. And she somehow got Oliver, you know, out of Bella, that was the dog that attacked him, out of Bella's jaws. She doesn't quite remember how, like, it's all sort of a, it was a vast blur to her. She ran home. She had her dog with her as well. And when she saw Bella heading towards them, she reached down and picked up her dog first, and that part kind of kills me. But her dog is not socialized well, so her fear, she didn't say this, this is what I think happened. I, like, anytime another dog heads her way, she'll pick up her dog, because she's always afraid of her dog like snapping or you know, getting himself in trouble by barking at a big dog. Whereas Oliver was peeing at the time, so he, and he's more socialized, was more socialized, and the neighbors insist that their dog is friendly. Oh, she's friendly, because they've had their dog off leash before, and people in the neighborhood get really upset with them and say, you need to leash their dog, and they're like, oh, she's friendly, she's friendly. Oh, fucking assholes. Anyway,
are they now like open that their dog is not friendly, or no?
Do you, I haven't know? As far as I know, that their dog hasn't been off leash since this happened. But so they have a live-in dog walker nanny person, and apparently it was that person who was walking Bella that night, and that person has a dog, and that dog has been off leash since, though. And my mom saw the woman who was there that night and the dog off leash, and was like, how could you have your dog off leash? And she's like, well, this isn't the dog who did anything. And my mom's like, but like, so that's, oh, I hate all these people. So anyway,
ew, yeah.
So my mom got Oliver, you know, went running home with both dogs. They got Oliver to the vet, and they did surgery, and he had puncture wounds around his neck, and the skin and muscle was torn from the bone around his chest. So they did surgery, and they realized, though, right away that hit something it seemed like the vet thought he had an underlying condition. His hematocrit was low. It was 20. That's a measure of the red blood cells. He's anemic, basically. He was pretty anemic. Or I don't know if 20 means pretty anemic or kind of anemic or somewhat anemic. And they wanted to keep him. But at this point, I was being told he was going to survive.
Okay. And you're still in Hawaii.
Yes. Trying to figure out, should we just come home? What should we do? And
I'm assuming you're not enjoying yourself at this point.
No. But people were like, if you can stay and have a good time, you should, because he's going to be okay. And he's at the vet and he couldn't come home anyway. So we stayed. This was Tuesday night. We stayed Wednesday and we left Thursday morning because we're just like, what are we doing? We're not having a good time. We were supposed to stay until Saturday or Sunday. And now I wish we had just flown home right away. I wish we had just, because we were in the airport when we got the call and we're like, should we just try to come home? But at that point, it seemed like totally overreacting because he's going to be fine. So
it would have been silly.
Yeah. And I guess I kind of wish that hadn't even been part of my thought process. I wish my thought process hadn't been, are we going to be those people who flew home right away because their dog was bit by another dog? Like, we just didn't know the whole story yet.
You're saying you wish you would have trusted your instinct to just go and not
just come home right away. Yes.
Yeah.
To not even think about how it appears. You know, like, I work with Adam Carolla, and he's always going on and on about people with their service dogs and people with their dogs in their restaurants and all of that. And the mm-hmm. truth is, I like seeing... I hope this doesn't get me fired. I mean, it wouldn't really. I like seeing dogs in restaurants. I like seeing dogs on planes. I like dogs a lot.
Me too.
I think it's cute. Obviously, if someone's dog is being an asshole, like this off-leash Malamute, I meant to say dire wolf. That's how I've been referring to the dog. If someone's dog's being an asshole, I think that's ridiculous. Or if someone's dog is bothering people, but just in general, and I think Adam's argument would be, but maybe having a dog in an establishment that serves food that is bothering people, whatever.
Yeah.
I think it's cute. I like it.
Yeah, I like it too, but I do get people like, that's gross, even though it's not, and they're cute, and it's like,
right.
Feels fun and safe to have animals around. It's
yeah.
Like comforting.
And I'm always like, oh, you know, so yeah. I don't mind it, but I guess a little bit there was that thought in my head of, are we going to be those people who are acting ridiculous about, well, I don't know that I was even going that far. I think I was just scared and frozen, kind of, you know, like I let my parents be the conduit between the vet and me until we got home. And that's another thing that I think, why did I do that? Why didn't I get on the phone with the vet? Because
yeah.
And it's because we were scared and it seemed like it was being handled and my parents trusted this vet. And I mean, this vet wasn't a 24-hour vet. This vet, they don't have someone there overnight. And in retrospect, I wish he had been in a 24-hour emergency facility where they have a criticalist on staff. I didn't even know that existed.
Yeah.
I didn't know. Yeah. I mean, it's like, for people whose dogs get attacked or whose dogs are in a life and death situation, go to a place that has a criticalist. They're like super specialized vets that deal with trauma and stuff like that. And I've only now learned about it. Only now do I know that there are these hospitals for pets that you walk in and it looks like a hospital for humans. The only way you know is that there's pictures of animals and there's small stretchers. But it's crazy. I had no idea there were hospitals that are like this level for animals. But of course, the cynic in me is like, or are they just more expensive and your pet dies anyway? Anyway, so back to what happened. So Wednesday, there was a chance maybe he could come home, but they wanted to keep him again overnight. And they told us at this point, he might not recover full use of his leg. And it's possible that the flesh could necrotize around the wound, which would just mean scarring. It's like, now if that had been the worst of what happened, that would have been amazing.
Yeah.
Because he would have been alive. But then Thursday, and this was the day we were flying home, I find out that his hematocrit has dropped. And so what that means is there's fewer red blood cells in there. And it's like, does he have an internal bleed, or could it be because he's on fluids? What's causing this? I don't know. We get on the plane not knowing anything, except that my dad said he might. No, my dad said he has Addison's and a liver shunt, but the good news is those are treatable. But the weird thing is that those were just on the list of things he might have because the vet's trying to figure out why is he anemic? What's going on? And I imagine also why is he, because he was really thin. Like this sort of haunts me. Maybe a couple weeks before the trip, I remember we were walking him and this woman reached down and pet him and she's like, oh, he's so thin. Does he just not eat? And he had always been thin, like really thin, especially for a Cavalier, but he had gotten even more thin. Like you could really feel his ribs. And he would go through bouts where he would be throwing up or he would have diarrhea and he wasn't eating. And I would take him to our vet in LA and they would check him and they'd say he got checked for worms so many times. He never ever had worms. And they'd just be like, oh, small dogs throw up. And so in the last couple of weeks before this happened, he seemed worse. He was eating even less. And I'm like, fuck, why did I not take him to the vet? And it's because the vet had seen him the month before for a vaccination and not said anything. It's like I had this false sense of security. And I just felt like I'm just going to be that person who's, it's going to be the same thing over and over again. I wish I had pushed harder because the truth was there was something wrong with him ever since he was little. And I didn't know it because the vet didn't find it. But so anyway, so his hematocrit drops. We get on the plane. I'm so, so afraid that he's going to be dead by the time we land. And he wasn't, but that was my fear. And I was like trying to analyze the fear. It's just because I'm far away or I'm out of control or whatever, because it really didn't seem like that's what was happening. I land and to this text from my mom saying Oliver's doing better. And I'm so relieved. And I call and they gave him a blood transfusion because his hematocrit had dropped even further, but they gave him a blood transfusion and he was doing better after the blood transfusion. So we landed that night. Friday morning, I call the vet. Oh, and they ran blood work on him. In retrospect, they should have done that blood work right away. I do not know why they waited until Thursday. They should have, when they saw that his hematocrit was 20, that should have triggered it. I've now talked to other vets, that should have triggered it. But Friday, I talked to the vet, and he tells me that Oliver's in kidney failure. And it's either because there's some sort of immune problem with his blood and that is shutting down his kidneys because of lowered blood flow, in which case the blood transfusion will fix it, or there's a kidney problem and it's probably congenital. And if that's the case, there is no cure. And now I wish he had looked, on Wednesday morning, they asked for Oliver's records from the vet in LA. They didn't look at that till Saturday morning. I wish they had looked at that it never occurred to me that I should be asking for a copy of all his records. I'm not a vet. I don't know what I would be looking at. But buried in that blood work, what they would have seen was at 7 months, his BUN, which is one of the kidney values, was 85, which is crazy high. It's so high that people have said to me the vet should not have even gone ahead and neutered him. It's too high. They should have tried to find it. I think they said to me, do you want to do blood work to make sure the anesthesia is safe? And it's like, of course, because of my fear of anesthesia. I think they ordered it and didn't even look at it. That's kind of the only thing that makes sense. And because my cynical dad, who doesn't trust anyone, he's like, oh, that happens all the time. Sorry, this is going to freak out everyone who's going to have any procedure. Like, oh yeah, that happens all the time. The tests get ordered and they don't look at the results. Not like it's okay, but just that it's a thing. And he's talking about in hospitals that happens. So basically there was this little ticking time bomb in his records that no one ever noticed, including these vets. Now they didn't, if they had looked at that, we wouldn't have gone through this thing of maybe it's going to be, he's going to be okay tomorrow. We would have just known there was a kidney problem. So anyway, he said, we'll know in 24 hours. It's like prognosis is guarded. It's 50-50. And I said, if it goes downhill, what's that? What's a death from kidney failure like? And he's like, it's a slow, protracted, not pretty death. But that was oh, good. At least we'll have time.
Yeah. Interesting.
So we go visit him and it's so sad, but this is the first time we've seen him since this happened, and his whole body is bandaged, and he's so excited to see us when we get there, and he's in this little cage, and he kept trying. He was a very submissive dog. Like, you know, if you go up to pet him, he'd flop on his back. Like, when I would come home, he would he would come running around the hall and instantly flop over onto his side for a belly rub, and his little tail would be wagging so hard he'd be hitting the carpet, and there'd be this little womp 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 sound. And he kept trying to roll over onto his side to give us his belly, but he couldn't really because he was injured. So I was like, I put my arm there to prevent him from even trying to flop over onto his side. So we spent some time with him and we took him outside. He was panting inside. I just pushed my eye so hard. I feel like I just injured my eye. I'm going to be okay, but I don't know what I just did to myself. He was panting inside, and we took him outside and he peed, and he was so much better after he peed that I'm also like, how often were you people letting him pee? Because he needed to pee so bad, and he was better afterwards. He also was super, like, I was very used to how he felt. He was the lightest dog on the planet. And in fact, I don't even think he really weighed 7 pounds. Their record said 7 pounds, but that seemed heavier though. I thought he was more like 6.5 or 6, but he was so heavy when I picked him up. I mean, Daniel, it's my husband, refers to it as like he was like a water balloon. Like, he was just so swollen. His abdomen was so distended. His eyes were bloodshot. His mouth was like bright red. And I thought that was from the blood transfusion, but now I don't know what that was from. And it was this hot little room they had him in, and there was like a syringe in the corner over here, and this like drop of, it was either food or feces. I don't know what it was. Just, it was gross in there. Ugh. And now I have a frog in my throat. Hang on. Sorry. That's so okay. Unpleasant for people. Unlike this delightful story. It was so hot in the little room. Like, I really wish they'd set us up in a private room so we could be with, if this was really getting to me yesterday. Yesterday I was thinking about it, that why did we not push to spend more time with him on what would be the last full day of his life? Instead, we were just like, okay, we'll hang out in this little room with all these cages, and it's totally gross, and it is super hot. And there's just so much noise, all these dogs barking, and everyone was unhappy. And I don't know how much time we spent with him. I mean, we spent a lot, but it was like we were like literally sweating. It was so, I think it's sort of their version of ICU, and they have it very warm in there on purpose, I imagine. I don't know. But finally I turned, and from this room you could see the operating room, and I saw this guy carrying this golden retriever with its tongue hanging out of its mouth, like this anesthetized golden retriever, into there. And I was like, oh my God, they're about to do surgery. We have to get out of here. I don't want to see surgery. So we left, and it's like, it was sort of time to leave anyway. We'd spent a lot of time with him. He was tired at this point, and we were so emotionally drained. But I look back and it's like, I couldn't, you know, like my fear of seeing a surgery is what made us leave at that time. I wish we hadn't left. I wish we had camped out, like spent as much time as possible with him. Again, I did not realize he was going to be going the next day. So go home next morning, talk to the vet. And he says the blood is doing okay, but his kidney values are like off the charts. Like, literally the BUN was so high, they couldn't measure it anymore. And he had a seizure that morning. And he said, I don't like to say this, but if it was my dog, I'd put him to sleep. Which is like, I just never, ever, 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 ever thought I'd be that kind of the person who would do that. I thought, I know one day someone's going to tell me that I should put this dog to sleep. Because it seems, in the same way that everyone gets induced when they give birth these days, it seems like everyone puts their dog to sleep. Like, dogs just don't seem to die on their own anymore.
Right. And it's a thing you think, there's no way I'll do it, but then you end up in the moment having to.
Right. And he was like, you know, you would, because the day before I was like, what about kidney transplant or dialysis? And he's like, you'd mentioned kidney transplant, frankly. And I said, yeah, would that work? And he's like, well, if it worked, no, I said, would that give him more time. And he's like, well, if it worked, it would give him more time. But frankly, I'm dubious that it would work. I don't think he would survive the surgery. I don't think he would live long enough to even find a donor. And so he's like, I can make some calls if you want. And I'm like, yeah, could you make calls just in case?
Yeah.
And so we drove down there and we get there. And he said that he talked to a couple surgeons and basically it's hard to even find a surgeon who will do the surgery anymore because it's so not successful and surgeons don't want to do surgeries that won't be successful. I guess with dogs, it just really, it doesn't take often. And I forget what else he said, but like essentially this dog would not be a good candidate for it because his heart's not doing well and his liver's not doing well either. I don't know what he based that on though, because like, it's not like he did tests for that, but that's what he said. And he's like, you know, in dialysis, well, you probably have to move to San Diego to do that. And like, even he's like, dialysis just wouldn't be practical. And even that, I'm like, what was that based on? Although I get that. I just wish we'd explored that more. Not like we're really going to move to San Diego, but
wait, why would you? I don't understand. Why?
Because that's where they do dialysis.
What like is dialysis?
Oh, dialysis is what they do for people with bad kidneys. It's where they remove the blood. They have a machine that filters the blood. So the blood goes out of you into a machine that essentially acts like a kidney and then goes back into your body clean.
And you would have to live in San Diego for him to
that's
have
what
this?
He said, because the facility is down in San Diego.
I don't understand. So you would have to take him to the facility every day.
It's 3 times a week. Which, okay, here's the thing. If this is what he needed to be alive, I get that that's not a good life for a dog.
Right.
To have
or
to,
for you.
Or for us, right. It's like a science experiment at that point. Like, what are you keeping alive here? Because if he really needed it 3 times a week for X amount of hours, you know, he's not having a lot of good days. But I've talked to a vet now who has suggested, but I don't know if this is the case or not, but suggested that the injury causes a lot of basically, so he had these crazy amount of toxins in his blood because his kidneys couldn't filter his blood anymore. But the injury from the attack could have caused extra toxins in his blood from the breakdown of blood and muscle and stuff from the attack, which taxed his kidneys even more, which I guess it's not that uncommon that small dogs after being attacked will go into kidney failure. He already, it seems like, had congenital kidney disease. So I don't know. But if part of the reason he was in kidney failure was because of the attack, then dialysis could have been a temporary thing to help him get over the hump.
I
don't know. If that's the case, then it's like it just would have been a temporary thing. I don't know. But instead, we spent some time with him. He was worse this day for sure, but he still like licked our hand and seemed excited to see us. And when we first saw him, I'm like, I cannot euthanize this dog today. There's still life in him. But then we took him outside because it seemed to perk him up so much the day before. And we put him down and he wagged his tail. And for a little while, it seemed better. And then he sort of like looked at us like confused and his legs kind of buckled and he had a seizure like right there in front of us. And that I ran inside to get someone. That was crazy awful. And, you know, like all his muscles like tensed up on and off and he was twitching and he actually bared his teeth because his lip was curled back and he was he peed and there's so much drool coming out. And I was like, is this because we took him outside? And the vet tech said, no, this is just what happens when there's that much, when the kidneys are failing, when there's that much toxins in the blood. But the vet said to us later, he's like, yeah, it's when you move him. He had a seizure when we tried to get a blood sample earlier. But then I found out that no, actually you can't induce a seizure from moving them. So I do not know what the truth is, but that
sounds like you're dealing with a lot of misinformation and you have to like, you're not.
I feel like I can't get the truth. It's kind of driving me insane.
Yeah.
It's driving me insane to the point where people are like, it's unhealthy that you're obsessed with this. And I'm like, okay, well, if your child dies, fur or human, let me know if you're just like cool with hearing a story that doesn't make sense and that's the end.
Right. Because you don't have answers, concrete answers.
And I get that I'm sure this is a phase of the grief, but I also feel like I feel like it's understandable that I'd want to know, especially because I was lied to a lot growing up. So I have a thing about wanting to know the truth. Yeah. Like Adam is very different. Adam and I think probably Dr. Drew are very different than I am. Their thing is like, what good, not about this, because I haven't talked to them about this, but just in general, like if people will call into the show wanting to, like, I suspect my dad might not be my actual biological father. Should I find out? Should we do the DNA test? Should I find my birth father? They'll be like, what good is this answer going to bring you? Whereas I'm like, I don't care about what it, I just kind of need to know the truth. That's my, that's like a trigger for me or whatever. Just a thing is like, I'm always... I just want to live in reality and I want to know what reality is.
Yeah.
So anyway, sorry, this is going so long.
No, it's very interesting.
Great. Someone's screaming because of this holiday. So we bring Oliver back in and at this point he's much worse. His breathing is kind of labored and one of his eyes isn't really functioning. And of course, I think that at the time I'm like, this is how close to death he is. But now I'm like, or is it just that this is how animals are after a seizure? Because after a seizure, I think now my understanding is that like basically your system goes offline and it takes a little while for you to come back. So maybe if we had waited it out, he would have come back to how he was before that day. But granted, that was not good. But the vets that I've talked to, and I don't know if they're just saying this to make me feel better, they're like, no, 100% euthanasia was what you had to do at this point. Like it was past the point of no return. Maybe they're just saying that to make me feel better. I don't know.
I know nothing, but it definitely sounds that way.
I think so. I mean,
just what you're explaining.
Yeah. And he wasn't urinating on his own at this point. So, and we kept saying to the vet, is he suffering? And he was like, well, you know, because of his injuries, he was like, he was picked up by a Tyrannosaurus Rex. So it wasn't the kidney. I don't think kidney failure is painful. That's what I'm understanding. But because of his injuries, he was in pain and he was still like, I never saw him without his bandages on. I never even saw the extent of the wound. I saw that he was shaved under the bandages, but that's like another thing that I never, you know, I just never saw really his whole being after that thing. So anyway, we spent more time with him. Vet came in. I said, are you sure he won't recover? And he's like, well, 95. And I'm like, what is that 5%? And then he turned to my husband and is like, oh, you got an optimist here. And I'm like, hey, dickwad.
Yeah, that's not cool.
Yeah. But I mean, and Daniel also was wanting the 100%. But then I've been told, oh, that's vet speak for 100%. But I was like, what is the 5%? And he's like, well, I haven't done any diagnostic tests on the kidneys. And and then we said, well, how long would that take? He's like, well, the weekend, probably a couple of days. And then Daniel said, would Oliver survive? And he's like, I don't think so. And I said, is there anything you could do if you found this out? And he said, no. And then I said, is there anything else that elevates the BUN this high that's not the kidneys? And he said, no. I've since researched all of that. I mean, I guess the thing is, no, there's nothing he could do if it's his kidneys. But what he could have found out was it wasn't his kidneys. But there's no indication that it wasn't his kidneys. It really seems that it was his kidneys because of, that was the morning that he said, and his BUN at 7 months was 85. So it really seems like it's a congenital kidney problem. They should have found that out earlier though, because then I left out another part of the story, which is I still had hope on Friday. It was 50-50. When I talked to the vet, I'm like, so there's still a lot of hope. He's like, I wouldn't say a lot. There's hope. He's like, I don't want to lead you down a primrose path. So I had hope because I've just been in the situation before with my family where it's like, we need a miracle. And then that comes through. Like my dad, doctor, like I mentioned, wasn't feeling well. And I got up early one morning and he was sitting there with the Merck Manual, which is, do you know the Merck Manual?
No.
You're a hypochondriac and you don't know Merck Manual?
No.
Oh my God.
Teach
it's like
me.
Before WebMD. It's just a book of all the syndromes and things, but it's a text. I mean, it's something that they refer to as, I don't think doctors look at WebMD. Maybe they do. I don't know. So anyway, he's all look and he pulls out. He shows me like his inside of his cheek and it's purple, and he shows me his arm and like touches it, and there's like purple spots forming under the skin. And so he was bleeding under the skin, and it turned out that he had an idiopathic reaction to a sulfa drug, which is an idiopathic reaction is when they can't explain why it happens. But he had a reaction to a drug and his platelet count dropped, and so he was bleeding out. And the first couple things they tried, like they did a bone marrow transplant, and the first few things, I think, or some, I forget what it was. It was like, we're going to try this. If this doesn't work, then we're going to try this. They had these things that they were going to try, but it was looking bleak because it wasn't working, and he was getting worse and worse in the hospital. And I just remember, and I'm not a religious person, but praying, like, please, please, don't let him die, please. And it turned out that he was okay.
I have to say, it's you just the vision you just gave me is like your dad just chilling, being like, hey, look at I'm purple. Like
well,
and not doing anything about it.
It was sort of he was weird. He was I think he was sick enough that he was weirdly calm about it. But he did go to the hospital
right,
that day.
Okay.
But yeah, he wasn't in an emergency state about it. Well,
right.
And I was present when he had a heart attack two years after that he survived.
Wow.
But he also was strangely calm about that. And my mom called 911.
Maybe it's a doctor thing.
I think it is. A denial thing. So so when they took him into surgery, I was so afraid that it was going to be like the doctor was going to walk out in slow motion, like shaking his head and with his, I was like, please let my dad live. Please. You know, I just have been in these situations where at the last minute things turn around.
Sure.
So I just was
That's your reality. You think like,
I think it's
you're
possible.
Used to that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I've had good outcomes from very bleak situations. So with Oliver, even though I was being told 50-50 and I knew it was bleak, I was like, I could just imagine the next day the doctor calling and saying, his kidneys turned around. And I was just imagining him on the little, the steps where I would take him, where I would walk him, and thinking, like, God, he gave us such a scare. But look, like, we'd never got to have him home again afterwards. And so that night I started looking up juvenile kidney disease. And once I read the description of it, that's really when I lost a lot of hope then, because it fit him so well and I knew there was no cure. So anyway, okay, so we decide to euthanize him, and because the doctor said he's in a semi-lucid state, like he can hear your voice, but the brain can't function when the toxins are this high in the blood. So, and it did seem that he was almost kind of brain dead by the time we decided to do it. Like I didn't want to do it when he was awake and looking at us, and he was asleep, but there was like a quality to the way he was asleep that it seemed like more than just sleep, because his eyes were kind of half-lidded and stuff. So as soon as the vet puts the euthanasia solution in his catheter, he sits upright and he yelps like the sound of like someone's on my toe or I'm in pain. Like a stop this kind of yelp. And I just, and by the way, my mom had said that she had heard that it's peaceful. And my brother told me about euthanizing their cat and it was peaceful. I was just expecting, the one thing I was expecting out of this awful thing was it's going to be peaceful. It was like a botched execution. It was so awful.
What?
And I just didn't think I would be able to sort of like be alive and like aware of this, like be exist inside this moment of my dog dying or us killing the dog, however you want to look at it. As soon as he's like sitting up yelping, I'm like, oh my God, like, and I want to, can we stop this? Except that I don't, what am I asking? Can we remove the solution from his veins? It's already in his veins. And then it's like, well, I just want it to be fast, but that also felt heartless. Like, I don't, like, I just, what? I just want my dog to die in a quick fashion. And at this, you know, it started with us having our arms around him. And I think at this point I had pulled away because I'm like, what the fuck is happening? And the vet's kind of like petting him and lowering him. But he did, I mean, I won't go into the detail because it's so upsetting, but he did kind of like spud. I mean, it was like a very kind of violent, upsetting death. I don't know when he actually died in the course of that. I don't know if that was just his body at a certain point making sounds. But my advice to anyone who is going to euthanize an animal is make sure they do the two-shot method, which is where they sedate them first. I didn't even know this existed. I was reading about euthanasia afterwards, and I read the Humane Society says, you know, ask for the two-shot method, and if the vet won't do it, go to a different vet.
Wait.
But I didn't even know this existed, that so, oftentimes they'll sedate them first, so they're asleep, basically, and then they give the thing that the overdose of the medication, and that's what stops their heart, or what kills them.
So this vet didn't even do that.
No, but I also know of other people who this happened to them. I think when the IV is in place, when there's already an IV, sometimes they won't do it for that reason. Or I don't know. I think that he probably thought Oliver was essentially comatose.
Yeah.
But hey, why not go for the extra insurance, you know? Because it was so awful. I'm traumatized. I'm still traumatized.
It definitely sounds to me like it was almost, this was way worse on you than it probably ever was on Oliver. Like I would think that he was probably very much out of it and comatose, and whatever reaction he had, he wasn't really there.
Right.
Sounds like the worst of this is all on you guys. Cause to you, you just see your, like, that sounds like
baby just got tortured. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right.
Regardless, it's just, like you said, traumatizing. I can't...
Right, like maybe it wasn't inhumane for Oliver, but it was inhumane for us.
Exactly.
So, in addition to the loss of him, which is crazy and upsetting and sad and just...
Unfair.
Yes. I just feel like almost everyone in this story let us down in some way. Like, we have so much anger and the universe. I'm angry at the universe, I think. Like I said, I'm not religious, but I do sort of believe, like, I'll refer to like the universe as sort of, not like I think there's a sentient being, but just sort of things falling into place. And I would kind of pray to the universe, which is, you know,
I get that,
my way of, I don't know,
sometimes you have to have something to speak to.
Yes.
You don't believe in God, but like you right want just like an
like
idea,
the energy out there. Yeah. Yeah, but I can't bring myself to talk to the universe or pray or any of that since then, because I just feel like I just feel like, hey, fuck you.
Like, you
and,
got
we're done.
You got burned so hard.
Yes, totally.
Oh my gosh. It's that story. I have like was so, this is going to sound terrible, like was so much more brutal than I expected it to. Like, that was like, I almost am like,
Do you regret asking?
Yeah. Like,
I'm going to talk about plants again.
Like, I feel terrible even like making you tell me that. It's just, but I also know like there's so much to be learned from it. And I feel like it's just, wow. I don't know.
Sorry. I should have.
No,
I've been trying to.
I wanted to know.
I've been trying to come up with a way to shorten it, because I feel like, you know, I'll give you the short. This is what I feel like. What do I do? I'll give you the short version and then I tell the long version. Like, I haven't been able to crystallize it, but I gave you the full on long version.
I know
so.
Everything.
Okay.
But now, this was a month ago, approximately.
No, it was actually, it was late April. No, late August. Sorry. So it's been a couple months.
Okay. And yeah. Where are you at like today?
I'm definitely better than I was. The first few weeks were just like like sleepwalking, but really pain, like nightmare walking through life. We would cry every morning before getting out of bed. And it just, the morning, I think, morning was the worst because that's when it hits you again. Like,
right.
I cannot believe this is the reality that we're in.
That's how breakups are. I know in the morning,
yes.
It's like, oh, this is really my life. This
yeah.
really happened. You're
yeah.
reminded.
So I'd say it's up and down. I know that for some reason around 6 weeks, it suddenly got a lot worse. And that was really weird to me because I thought I was doing better. And I think it's just, there's just for this, there's, it's so complicated. It's like there's the loss of Oliver and then there's my feelings about this other stuff. And then there's actually the trauma of what happened to him, knowing he was attacked. And then the trauma of his death and the fact that it was so sudden and the difficulty of finding out information and the way it all came out and unfolded that, you know, like I said, just the other day, I was just thinking about his second to last day and feeling upset that we hadn't done that differently. And I think that, you know, it's been a while since I really thought it. It's just all these different days, different aspects of it all hit me. And I wish it wasn't still so much on my mind, but it is. And maybe, you know, someone really close to me committed suicide many, many years ago. And that really kind of floored me for a couple of years. I was not in deep mourning for a couple of years, but I'd say it took me a couple of years to kind of get back to the place I was before.
Yes, I fully identify with that. I had a friend that was killed in a drunk driving accident, and I remember like a year into it, maybe a year and a half after it had happened, being like, I was constantly, ever since that had happened, like I didn't want to ever drive at night. Like I would cancel my shows all the time. I would never want to do my sets. Like I didn't want to be out past 11. And then a year and a half to 2 years even after his death, I was like, oh, this is why. Because like I remember having this moment where I put it all together, like, oh, I'm not over Angelo's death and I'm like afraid because of it.
Right.
It's, you're right. Those things, like, it takes a while to get back to where you were before it happened.
Yeah. Right. So, yeah. So I just sort of had this realization that, you know, and I'm sure there's people who are like, you're going to compare a dog to a human death. But for us, the role he had in our life, the fact that he made us a family, the fact, you know, it was a huge loss for us. And maybe it's going to take me a year or 2 years. I don't know. The grief doesn't seem to be going anywhere, even though it's definitely getting better.
I do think there are people who are like, it's just an animal, but they obviously just literally do not understand.
I feel sorry for their animals.
Yeah.
or
they just don't have animals.
Yeah.
Like I remember back to being a fourth grader and thinking if my dog got out and was about to be hit by a car, I know now I could never do this, but I was like, I would give my life to save my dog. Like that's how I couldn't imagine being alive without my dog. Like people, it's like there are some people who just don't understand, but like if you have a bond with an animal, it is your family, it is your baby. Like it is like losing, I mean, neither of us have lost a child that we gave birth to, but like
not yet.
Yeah, but like, so obviously we're not anyone to compare it to that, but this is what we had. And like I totally, yeah, I get what you're saying. And
I heard someone say that these things in our, actually it was someone who was talking about feeling creatively blocked and to think about things in your life as metaphors, you know, and what are these metaphors for? And I was thinking, well, what is Oliver's death a metaphor of? Or like, what is the meaning of this? What does it represent? And it's, he represented innocence and purity and fragility and vulnerability. And I think one aspect of what for me is, and by the way, I think he represented that to everyone, though. This was a dog that had a lot of fans. I think that when you looked at his pictures, that's what was so cute about him. It's like, oh my God, he looks like a child baby dog being.
Yeah.
And angelic and just so sweet. And I think that it's like here was this vulnerable, fragile little being that wasn't protected. And that's what gets me, is that he wasn't protected, and we who were supposed to protect him weren't here when this happened, and we couldn't save him. And, you know, we had, I don't know. And then, you know, my parents, I think that I have some anger at them, even though it was definitely, I mean, my mom was trying to take care of him. She was walking him. It's, you know, it's not like she neglected him, but just, I think that the anger over it happened on their watch, you know, I don't know.
Right. But since then, you have a dog now.
We have a new dog. Yes.
Like,
we got a new dog.
That? What's going
on? It's good. I am, obviously, we got a new dog pretty quickly, and some people were like, a lot of people actually are like, you have to get a new dog. It's the only thing that'll make you feel better. You have to. But I've since started going to this pet loss grief support group. And they're very much about not getting a dog right away, unless you want to. And I'm like, oh, too late. You know, and a lot of people in there are like, I could never, I'm not ready. I could never. And I was like, I felt ready pretty quick. I think just because I'm like, I have to do this. I feel too sad. Also, I think maybe for someone who's lost a dog that was 14, 15 or 16, actually usually dogs don't live that long, but I think the idea of going out and getting a puppy is crazy. But for us, it's like we essentially lost a puppy. You know, he was we'd had him for a year and a half. So maybe we weren't that far from the puppy phase. But it at the beginning, we definitely were like, why aren't we bonding with her? And I think it's just that our heart, I mean, we were bonding with her, but why aren't we bonding her in the same way?
Yeah.
I think our hearts were just kind of too shattered. But I definitely love, her name's Wendy, and I definitely love having her. And it makes it so much easier to get up in the morning. And, you know, when I feel sad about Oliver, I'll hug her. But there are times where it's like, now it's Allison and Daniel and Wendy. And what happened? Like, where's the other one? How did this happen? You know?
Right. Are you glad that you?
Yes. You're 1,000%.
Wow. Okay. That's
glad
cool.
That we have her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, but now I'm like, I want to get another one. Like, I have to fight this. I for some reason, I'm like, I want to get another puppy. I have to fight this urge to drown my sorrow in puppies. But
why?
Then there's even people, why should I fight the urge?
Yeah.
I know. Well, maybe there's no reason to fight the urge. Maybe I should just do it. What's wrong? I mean, if one dog's good, probably two dogs is better.
Yeah.
But I sort of feel like the more prudent thing would be to wait till she's older. A little bit older, at least, as opposed to having two puppies in the puppy phase at the same time.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, though. I don't know. I was holding her, and I said to Daniel, I just want more of this.
Oh.
And he said, I want less of that, meaning the crazy puppy phase. That's what he meant. Because she's teething. I mean, she's very puppyish.
Like, what does she do that's puppyish?
She's teething, so she wants to bite on everything. And that includes, like, just anything she can get her mouth on. So I'm trying to think if she's ruined it. She's bit the corner of books. I'm trying to think if she's ruined anything really, though. But she'll just destroy whatever she can. So there's that. She barks. Oliver never barks. She barks a lot. She's loud. And she's also, she weighs more than Oliver. So when she jumps up, she, like, her nails kind of dig into you, and that's a little bit painful. And she's just a lot of crazy puppy energy.
Gotcha. Yeah, I remember when I got my dog, and he was a baby and a puppy, and he would teeth and he would bite, but he was such a baby, so like his bites didn't hurt. It almost like felt good. It was like a little scratch. And then I remember when he was a grown puppy and his teeth were full. I was like, what have I done? Now he's biting and it hurts. Like, he thinks it's okay and it's very painful. I remember making that. It was a huge mistake. Chewed a lot of stuff too.
I do not know how people train big dogs.
No.
Because Wendy is bigger than Oliver in that she's like 13 or 14 pounds now, and Oliver was just 6 or 7. But people who have puppies that end up being big dogs, like, because I imagine they all go through that phase where they're jumping up and they're kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm.
How do they not do a lot of bad things?
Destroy so
they probably
much.
Do, yeah.
I know my dog destroyed so much. I don't have a single pair of high heels anymore because he destroyed them all. He destroyed, like, makeup brushes. Yeah, it was...
Have you met Chelsea Peretti's dog?
Yes.
Because I'm now kind of obsessed with her dog through photos
and
her podcast and stuff. Is he super sweet?
He's super sweet.
Is he little?
Yes. I think he's like 8 or 9 pounds.
Oh.
Yeah. He's so cute.
He's super cute in the pictures. I was really, really happy for her when she got her dog.
Yeah. She's very happy with him. Yeah, and I'm also looking.
You are?
I've been looking for a long time, but I'm really trying to like wait out, because I'm trying to rescue just because I want to avoid a puppy phase situation, because I don't think I'm prepared for it. But it's like, actually, you'd be the good person to talk about this with. Is I found a dog. I don't know. I think I talked about this on the last episode, but I found a dog. He's like my dream dog in appearance. Like, I really liked small black dogs. Mm-hmm. He's like 5 pounds, some kind of terrier mix. So cute. But he's at a shelter, has the worst behavioral problems. He won't let you touch him like without, you know, mm-hmm. growling and attacking. And I've visited him twice now. And like, no one's going to adopt him. He's going to get put down. And like, I don't know what to do. Like, there's almost no way I can adopt him, but like in my head I keep thinking about it. I don't know. I know I shouldn't get a dog that's not nice. That would be a nightmare.
Has the shelter said anything about whether they think that he could be rehabilitated?
Well, the first time I went, the guy was like, do not adopt this dog. It's not good.
And the shelter said that?
Yeah, the guy working there was like, you're an idiot. And then the second time, the woman was like, he's making slow progress. She was like, I'm the one that deals with him. He likes me. I still don't trust him, though.
Right.
So, I don't know. I'm like, now I want this dog that I'm, like, scared to... I can't even pick up.
Right.
Which is, like, insane. I probably won't go through with it, but I haven't given up.
Yeah. I know when they get under your skin. See, I would get... If you really can't get him out of your mind, what I would do is I would find a dog trainer who could go with you and assess.
That's interesting.
And I mean, if you'd be willing to pay the money to have a dog trainer work with him, that's what I would do.
Right.
I mean, but it doesn't sound like the best choice.
I know.
But saving him seems like a good idea.
I know, doesn't it? But then after the last visit, I came home and was like, because I'd seen two dogs that day, and one dog was like so happy to see me and so eager for love. But he had this terrible skin condition where I'm like, okay, I need to like wait and let this let it get cleared up. Yeah, whatever. Treated. And then like I just left with this feeling like that dog was so sweet and wanted nothing but love. Why would I even want this dog that's like such an asshole? Like he was such a little jerk. Like you try to touch him and he is mean to you for it. So then it's so.
Is like, it because of how he looks? Or do you want the challenge?
Why I like him? Because it's purely vain. Like, he's purely just the cutest dog I've ever wanted.
But I think that means something. I mean, it shouldn't. It should just be what's on the inside at the same time.
Yeah.
Cute. I mean, Oliver was really cute.
He was really cute.
He was super cute. Wendy is cute too, but she does not have a face that is as cute. And I can say that because she doesn't listen to podcasts. But her face is she's just not as cute. She's cute. She's definitely cute and she's definitely sweet. And I'm waiting for that moment when, and I feel like it'll be a few years down the road, when I look at her and I'm like, I can't believe I ever thought other dogs were cuter because she's just the cutest thing. But right now it's like she's the cutest thing except for Oliver, who was cuter. He just was. I don't know.
No, so. It's true. Like, yeah, I am this dog. Like, I can't stop thinking about how cute he is, but also that he's a jerk.
Like, do you look on Petfinder? Because now that I'm obsessed with getting another puppy, I've been looking on Petfinder, and I've been because I want to adopt, but I haven't actually gone to the shelters. I have gone to the shelters in the past, and I always found that to be really depressing.
It's
and
really
I never
rough.
Found a dog that was the kind that I wanted, but. Kind that I want to be in, I pretty much only saw big dogs.
Yeah.
It's hard.
It's
like how do you go about trying to find the dogs?
So there's like a couple of the places in LA, like there's one on Fairfax called Barkin' Bitches.
Oh, yes.
Worst name ever. And then there's one in Studio City called Lucky Puppy. Like there's these places where they just have dogs that are
like smaller, an adoption
cuter.
Shop.
Yeah. So I go there frequently or look on their websites, and then I also use adoptapet.com.
Is that better? I looked at that today. Is that better than Petfinder?
I still don't know what the difference is. Like, okay. I still haven't decided. And then I also, I didn't know this, but there's a site that has all the dogs that are at all the shelters. So you don't even have...
Is that Petfinder?
No. It's like laanimalservices.com, I think.
Oh.
And you just like search adoptable dogs. And then I also look at the Pasadena Humane Society website. And I have this girl who a friend referred me to who will email me dogs. Like, I'm like on the hunt all the time, constantly. And like, I'll go to the shelter. Like, last Friday, I went to the shelter to see Grumpy, who's the mean dog I told you about. That's the name I gave him. And then like, these are like, it's also they're in the worst areas and so much driving.
Yeah.
I'm like kind of burnt out on my dog search. I'm very much thinking of like just getting a puppy at this point. I don't know what's going to happen. Where do you get your dogs?
I went to a breeder.
You did?
Yeah. Which, by the way, I don't feel entirely good about.
Oh, you don't?
Actually, it couldn't have turned out worse for us with Oliver, I think, given that he had congenital health issues. With Wendy, though, it's okay. But when I say I'm not entirely okay with that, what I mean is I'm very much someone who believes in rescuing and believes in adopting. And that's what I had set out to do initially. I'll go back to that in a second. But yeah, I feel like a hypocrite that I didn't do that.
I mean, look at me, like I'm trying and it's not working.
That was the boat I was in where mm-hmm. Because I didn't even consider anything other than rescuing or adopting initially when we were looking for the puppy that was Oliver ultimately. And I spent so many months looking and going to shelters. And so I'd go to shelters and I'd see a bunch of dogs that would be great if you have a house and you have a lot of space.
Yeah.
And you are a seasoned dog owner and you know what you're doing. But we were first time dog owners, basically. We both had dogs growing up, but they weren't our dogs. And we knew we wanted a small, sweet dog. And also, I would be in these situations, I did this so many times, where I'd be like, okay, this dog is in foster care or in foster, being fostered or whatever. So I'd drive all this way because I was supposed to meet someone at a certain time and they wouldn't show up. And then I'd get a text like, oh, sorry, I lost my phone. Or what? Like, I drove to the worst areas and I spent so much time with people who were super flaky. And I still don't know what was going on. I still don't understand why people were so super duper flaky. Maybe they get inquiries about dogs all the time and it just, right. They don't have time to deal with it. But yeah, I remember going to this one woman's house. And when I got there, it's like, oh, the dog is at someone else's house. And I drove to this other woman's house. And it was crazy.
The other thing, too, about those foster situations is, like, I had a friend who was fostering a dog, and then it's, like, impossible to get the dog. Like, they make yes. you go through all these, jump through all these hoops, and, like, you're on a waiting list. That's another thing that I want to avoid. It's, like, that's why I actually I'm going straight to the shelters, because I do not want to fall in love with a dog and then be right. told I'm like not suitable or something.
That happened to me in New York. There was this dog I fell in love with, but then someone else adopted it out from under me, or not out from under me. They were ahead of me in line for the adoption thing. So yeah. So we, with Oliver, we looked at it like, well, we rescued him because he was a runt, and and in retrospect, it's like, we did give him a good life for the time that he had, probably, yeah. You know, but yeah, I don't know. The thing about with a breeder, it's like, you know exactly what you're, well, I say that even though we have this situation that was like horrendous, but you know what you're getting, and you can find a dog. So, and we looked at it like, well, it's not like we're supporting a puppy mill.
Right.
Because, you know, and if you can find an ethical breeder. And we did all this research to make sure we were finding ethical breeders and stuff. But still, I would feel better if we had rescued or adopted. Because I do think that's the more responsible thing to do.
Right. I mean, I know that. But again, like where I'm at right now, I'm just like, I want to care for an animal, and if I have to go to a breeder, like, I don't know, I don't think there should be shame associated with that.
Yeah.
But again, like, I feel like I've had a couple people, I've run into them, they have the cutest dog, it's the exact dog I want, and they're like, yeah, we found him, he was in a trash can. And
I don't believe that. I feel like people are lying.
I hope you're right. I don't know. Yeah.
There are certain dogs where it's like, the dog is so unusual or such a special something or other that I'm like, and it's a puppy. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
What shelter did you find that dog in? And I know from feeling like it would just be easier if I lied. There's got to be people who are lying. Well, in fact, I know. Do you know Jenny Mullen?
No.
Jason Biggs' wife. She just wrote a book and she's an actress. And when I had her on my podcast after we were talking, and I'm like, oh, where did you get your dog? She's like, they were rescues. But she just put out a book. And in her book, she explains that she tells people they're rescues, but she actually bought her dog before she knew any better at a pet store.
No.
Yeah, but she got her dog a long time ago. But yeah, so I just think that happens more often than people admit.
That really kind of makes me feel better, because this was the most infuriated. Like, I was ready to start looking through trash cans. Like,
where is this dumpster that unwanted dogs are in? I'm so sorry, but I'm all of a sudden seeing the time and I'm worried about my car.
What time is it? Oh, yes. Okay, let's wrap it up. Thank you for coming.
Thank you so much for having me.
Where can people find more of you?
People can find more of me. And by the way, I'm not all the time this much of a sad person.
No, this is a special episode.
But a lot of the time I have been. You can find me on Twitter at Allison Rosen. And you can find my podcast at AllisonRosen.com. And it's also on iTunes. Allison Rosen is Your New Best Friend is the name of my show.
It's amazing. I love it. I listen to it all the time. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Feral Audio.
It's so cold in here.
As a branch of the United States government, it is the mission of the National Security Agency to assess and flag citizens of the country who may present a threat to its security. The NSA has clearance to wiretap by any means necessary.
Tapped. Incidental recordings of private conversations from the files of the NSA.
Now on feralaudio.com.